Shirley
Crabtree. Big Shirley Crabtree. Yes.
I have it written down here.
She was the only person who went, "Don't call me Shirley." He actually went, "No, please, call me Shirley. Please call me Shirley."
Welcome to Worst Foot Forward, where we celebrate the worst things in life. I'm Barry McStay, and each week I, my co-host, and our guest propose our candidates for the title of the world's worst something. It's a scary world these days, a world without much hope. People say there are no more heroes, but what is a hero? Does he have to be a granite-jawed hunk in spandex? What about the dazed, hungover, 30-something, underpants on outside his trousers, the towel he fell asleep on stuck to his still-sweating back? He looks bloody heroic to me. We celebrate those whose kryptonite is success, whose superpower is mediocrity, and whose cape has a big red L for loser on it. And sidekicking alongside me this week is my very own boy blunder, Ben Vanderveld.
Hello, pal.
To infinity and beyond, Ben.
To infinity, up to infinity, and then crashing into infinity and sliding down infinity.
Not slightly misjudging where infinity is.
Yeah. You just described what I look like most Monday and Tuesday mornings, that if you substitute red dressing gown for cape.
Yes.
Or as I call my dressing gown, my inspiration kimono. We should introduce our guest.
We should, he's very politely.
He is. Our guest is Jim Smallman, who is a superb comedian, presenter, and most importantly, is one of the co-promoters of the most successful independent wrestling company in the road. In the road.
Our shows are dangerous. They're done in the middle of the M1. Very dangerous.
Yeah. There's lots of other independent companies that are successful on that strip of road.
That particular strip of tarmac, we are nailing it.
Did you mean to say the word world?
I didn't mean to say the word world. Fuck me.
It's hard, isn't it?
Really tough.
Mate, you should not drink that sherry before you start this.
It's a good job podcasting isn't a verbal medium.
Finish introducing the excellent Jim Smallman. Jim has appeared on Fighting Talk several times, and he has supported the brilliant Mick Foley and William Regal on their tours of the UK. And 2 months ago, Progress Wrestling hosted their biggest ever show, selling out the Brixton Academy.
Yeah. There's a picture on my Twitter. You know the cover photo you have on Twitter?
And
it's me stood with my arms aloft in the ring with 2,500 people chanting my name. And I know for a fact that at the side of the ring was my wife and my, at the time, 4-week-old son, who was asleep for all of it. Didn't care. And I showed that picture to my daughter, and she was 13 and quite wise. And she went, "If you take those ring ropes away, just looks like you've got a cult." I was like, I would.
The closest to Nuremberg you're ever going to get.
I've just thought about the to infinity and beyond phrase.
Yeah.
And it's something that's popped into my head. Is, do you reckon that phrase was actually dreamed up by children having an argument? Because you know when you're a kid, to a million and beyond, to infinity. Oh shit, he's gone infinity.
Infinity plus one and beyond.
Also, you say there's no more heroes, but they're on offer in Tesco.
really, Tesco value heroes.
Really,
yeah, well,
really
since
tasty.
Bowie died, they're trying to get rid of those albums.
Wrestling is me thing now. It got me my blue tick on Twitter, because comedy was never getting me that. One day, all my wrestler friends started getting blue ticks, and then one day I opened an email, it went, "Congratulations, you're now verified." And I'm like,
"You didn't have to ask."
They just gave it me.
How do they know then? They just went, "Yeah, he looks like the most Jim Smallman."
Well, I think it's probably because I've been on Twitter since before Twitter was a thing.
Yeah.
So when it was literally just four people just tweeting each other, going, "You're right, and this is. I hope this takes off soon."
Yeah, well, I'm the same. Graham Lenehan follows me, and writer of Father Ted, the IG Crowd, who's a total legend. Because basically in 2008 there were only about 7 Irish people on Twitter. And he and I were one of them, or a few of them.
I did something the other day. I deleted a load of my old tweets. So I tweeted 44,000 times.
How did you go back to the start?
So you have to download your archive. You have to upload your archive to a bit of software, pay them £12, and then you can basically delete. So I deleted everything from a year ago backwards.
You are the Hillary Clinton of wrestling promotion.
Yeah, and it was partly, so there's nothing embarrassing about anything I've ever said on there to do with wrestling. Partly... just because it's a really cleansing thing. The only thing I'm sad about is I met my wife on Twitter, so it did mean I deleted the first time I ever tweeted her and went...
My husband and I, he upgraded his phone a couple of years ago and it lost all our WhatsApp conversations. No. Right, and we had our conversations all the way back to when we first met.
Yeah.
And thankfully I still had it, so I sort of, I uploaded it to my computer, so we then had them somewhere, but there was a little moment from where he went like, I just feel like I've lost a big part of us.
Yeah,
like,
and
all those dick pics that we sent each other in the early days.
My wife, and she won't thank me for saying this.
My parents are going to know I say the word dick pic.
my wife, once we were sat, we'd not been together for we've been together like 5 years, and we had not been together for ages at the time. We sat on the sofa one day and she was fiddling with the phone for ages. I went, what are you doing? And she went, you've seen a bit. And she'd made a collage of dick pics that I'd sent her.
Like one of those ones that when you zoom out, it shows it's in the shape of your dick.
Exactly. Yeah. It's like a magic eye picture of my flaccid penis. it took 3 pictures to make. No, it didn't. But yeah, she just, and she'd done it artily in black and white. But for some reason,
tasteful.
Obviously the darker pictures with a tip. And she just, I was like, why have you done that? She went, nothing on telly. And that is why we're married.
Just waiting for Strictly to come back.
This is the same woman who, my sister-in-law is in hospital at the minute because she broke her ankle. My wife went to visit her in an inflatable T-Rex costume. I'm like, why did you do that? Because it's funny. That's why we're married.
I saw that and I couldn't believe that that was true.
Yeah, with a handbag on a tiny dinosaur arm. And like, I was like, how did the other people in the hospital react? Like, they were not amused. No. But we were. That's the important thing.
She could have gone, I would have brought you chocolates, but I just couldn't reach to pick them up.
Yeah. But that's the key, I think, to being in a relationship with a comedian, is the fact that she will go with really niche jokes. Like, she'll do niche stuff to pop me all the time. Yeah. And that's what our relationship's based on. When we were first together, we used to just, every now and again, if we'd be in the supermarket, one of us, without warning the other, would just, like, scream at the top of our lungs, I wish I'd never married you! And then just walk off just to see what people did.
That's nice.
It's acceptable.
Oh, having a public Barney is so much fun.
Yeah.
When it's not meant.
Well, we tend not to have any, but we start apologising to each other as soon as any arguments start.
And also, the dinosaur costume she was wearing was called Public Barney, so...
and it's Private Barney, the one for the bedroom.
It is. Yeah. So it's got secret holes cut out.
Oh, mate. having a T-Rex fetish is so bad. Should be the bedroom going, don't move, it's hunting is based on moving.
Yeah, it's a laugh a minute. I worry about, because we're fairly non-traditional parents, and our son's 3 months old today, and we... Wow.
Happy birthday. What better tribute could we have than you would come and talk shit to us?
He's got more fancy dress costumes than real outfits because he was born and Halloween was coming up, and we like Halloween, but we'll dress him. So, like, he'll frequently be dressed as Dracula for no reason. Because he's got a cape and a bow tie and it's funny.
Yeah.
We went into Mothercare the other day, they were selling Ghostbusters outfits. He's wearing that all the time.
Like they say with Halloween or with Valentine's Day, why just restrict yourself to one day a year of expressing your love?
I want to see your missus dressed as Public Barney carrying your son dressed as Dracula as a full horror show matchup.
And then just me dressed, well, as normally as I can dress.
That kind of leads us quite neatly onto what we always ask our guests, actually.
Yeah, so you're clearly the best at having tattoos.
Yes.
What are you the worst at in the world?
Being a party guest.
Oh, that's a very quick answer.
Because there's lots of things I'm not good at. I'm not going to lie. I'm not good. Like, I'm not good at being a conventional dad. I know this from my teenage daughter just now looks at me and rolls her eyes and realises she's the grown-up in the relationship and has done for a long time. And I'm not particularly good at being a human being in general, but because I quit drinking and drugs and everything when I was 20 years old, I both hate parties, hate them. If I get invited to them, if you ever invite me to a party... and you think, oh, we invited Jim to a party, but he didn't come and be a bad guest, but he wasn't very well that day. There's a reason I wasn't very well. I was completely fine. I fucking hate your party.
Is this any party? Like dinner parties, house parties?
Oh, God. Any party.
Baby showers.
Like, I like my wife's company, and I like I could sit and chat to you guys. Mm-hmm. It's fine. The minute, if there was 10 more people in this room and booze was involved... all I would be thinking is about killing you all. And because my job is entertaining drunk people, I'm fine. So I'm fine when I'm on stage. But then I very rarely talk to audience members after gigs and stuff because I'm uncomfortable around that because I don't drink and I'm really uncomfortable around it.
You like the protection of the fourth wall.
Yeah. And I reckon in my adult life, since I quit drinking and everything, I reckon I've been... to 5 parties.
Wow.
I've got out of going to nearly all of them. And all of those 5 parties I have hated, especially parties where people come up to me and say, have I introduced you to this person? I think you'll really get on. No, I like to choose my own friends. If you tell me I'm going to get on with someone, I am going to find a million reasons why I hate this person. I want to murder this person and dance upon their grave. I'm looking at my wife... hates human beings as much as I do, which means no one is ever invited to my house.
You don't have a house, you've just got a bunker.
Well, here's the thing. Say you guys are in Chester, which is the nearest big town to us, and you needed somewhere to crash, you'd be more than welcome. We love having a visitor or two visitors. The minute that it's over 2 visitors and it becomes a party, no, go away. We have no interest in this. All people do when they come to your house and come to a party is they'll come to it. And they will abuse your hospitality. They will probably damage your house. Yeah. And then they will go away afterwards and complain about the things that you didn't do 100% perfect in their company. And when I'm forced to be sociable with people at parties, especially when they're drunk, there's something about people being drunk in someone else's house or someone being drunk at a big function where they talk even more bollocks than they would do. And I'm forced to spend time with these people. There's something in it that just fills me full of rage and means that I am... literally ready to murder.
Well, I'm going to describe your absolute hell.
I'm holding onto the table.
So I was at Angela Bonds' birthday party last week. Lovely Angela Bonds.
And... I legitimately couldn't go to that.
Sure, Jim.
Get that denied soon.
But I love Angela. And the thing with me is, if I wasn't invited to stuff, I'd be really annoyed. And that's the really
stupid
thing.
You want the option
thing.
To say no.
Yeah, and I genuinely couldn't. I was working, so I genuinely couldn't go. But Angela's a friend. And how I tend to treat situations like that is turning up and just for 10 minutes and going, hiya, happy birthday, leaving. I'm all right with that because then I feel I've done my duty as a friend.
Yeah.
You would
not have been able to get out of this. So it was a lovely mix of Angela's friends and family and a bunch of comics and Darren. And Darren...
Yes, he told me about Darren.
Yeah, Darren crashed the party and just like, hi, I'm Darren, I'm not on coke, I'm not on coke, nice to meet you, I'm Darren, I'm not on coke. And
there's some red flags with Darren.
There are. Big, big red flags. He's got a pair of linesmen running either side of him. So by the time I'd arrived, Jean-Luke Roberts and Matthew Crosby had done a solid 45 minutes with him. And they tried to pass him off on Adam Bloom. They tried to pass him off on Mike Wilmot. Did not last long with Mike Wilmot. Uncle Mike moved him on quickly. And then by the time I got there, it was Paddy from Johnny and the Baptist. And Paddy is the nicest man in the world and would not tell him to fuck off.
Yeah.
And it was just like this monkey on a back getting passed round and round. I eventually had to have my time with him. And all in the background, I could see Matthew Crosby just mouthing, I'm so sorry. Until the point that he got I felt like a woman in Donald Trump's company because he started getting real grabby with me.
Oh, and that's weird.
Really weird. And my only way out was I invented a big sister of mine who was in the armed forces and admitted to carrying out war crimes. He didn't care. That was kind of cool. And I think I invented relationship troubles of my own that I had to go and deal with. Nope, not interested in that. Then my dad was in hospital and I had to go and call him. Wouldn't let me go. I literally had to physically remove myself from his company.
I don't drink either. And that sort of situation, the worst thing you can hear coming out of that sort of person's mouth is, no, seriously, listen. Seriously, no, listen, listen, seriously, seriously, listen.
I think I hate that even more than, here's one for you.
With Jim's knowledge and depth of experience, we are going to discuss the world's worst wrestler this week. And we're going to start off with the littlest hobo himself, yeah, weighing somewhere between 10 and 15 pounds, Ben Van Der Vaart.
There's so many difficult ways to find who's the worst wrestler, especially in a sport that... Basically, it's the only sport I can think of where sort of your win-loss record doesn't really matter.
Mm. Here's a newsflash for you guys.
Yeah.
Wrestling... And I know this is going to blow some of your minds.
Hang on.
But wrestling...
No.
Just brace yourself.
Please, Jim.
Wrestling,
Jim.
Strictly speaking,
Bruh.
It's not 100% on the fucking level.
Whoa!
Sorry, sorry to break that to you.
Mind blown.
Jim, that's your fucking Gerald Ratner moment. Progress will never be the same again. I can't believe you've done that.
We have little kids all over the country going, what? What about Santa?
My daughter, because...
He's got a great record in the ring.
My daughter, because I filmed a video of my daughter beating a wrestler up
My Edinburgh show. Oh, cool.
Because he beat me up for a storyline. And legitimately, I'm not trained, so he legitimately... I just went, just beat me up. It'll look cool. Mm. And he did, but he made me lose 20% of my hearing in my left ear by knocking me out. Which I kind of regret, but we sold the next show out, so fine.
Swing roundabouts.
So in my Edinburgh show last year, I played the video of him beating me up, which my daughter found on the internet, rang me up and went, are you all right? So I introduced her to Jimmy, who you've met before.
Yeah.
I introduced her to Jimmy, and they filmed her beating him up to get revenge. Amazing. She knows that wrestling isn't on the level.
Yeah.
However, all of her friends who are boys at school are into WWE know that her dad is a wrestling promoter, and she maintains that it's completely legit.
Hmm.
So, because she knows I don't want it to be ruined for those kids, which is such a cool thing for us to do.
This is the word I learned yesterday. Is it kayfabe?
Kayfabe, which is an old carny word, because it's pig Latin for fake.
Of course. Yeah. So it means keeping sort of the secrets.
Yeah, you'll often hear, less so these days because most fans are smart to it, but if all of a sudden a fan was backstage, you might hear someone shout kayfabe, which makes everyone sort of...
If a wrestler and another one's in a feud, they can't suddenly be drinking a coffee together.
I mean, at Progress, we're very keen on if there's good guys and bad guys, they're not seen arriving together, which often they don't. They literally like comedians do. But the point about win-loss records is sometimes important because there are people who genuinely keep win-loss records.
Oh, that's adorable. I didn't think that
fans or wrestlers
themselves. We used to do it as a company. We used to do it on match graphics. When we'd maybe only done 10 shows, we'd do it. And then we realised that sometimes we might want to push someone who's perhaps not won a match forever. And then you have to conveniently forget that stuff and make someone look unbeatable for two or three shows.
Well, there was a thing about, wasn't Andre the Giant or something when he was with WWF in the 80s? He went 7 years or something without losing a match.
Yes.
Under their banner, he lost a couple of other matches.
I think Andre the Giant in his entire career probably only lost 10 matches in his entire career.
Yeah. Wow.
But there's a reason for this. He was bigger than everybody else. It was not believable for him to lose.
Yes. Yeah.
And also, he was so big that if he decided he wasn't losing anyway, he wasn't losing. There's a video of him wrestling a Japanese guy called Akira Maeda, where Akira Maeda, who was a legitimately tough guy, just went, fuck it, I'm not losing to Andre. So the whole match. And when wrestling isn't choreographed and people decide to not cooperate anymore... It's the most boring thing in the world to watch, unless you know what to look at. So you just got Akira Maeda just kicking him in the legs, like properly pummeling his legs until Andre the Giant just walks off. That's what happens when people don't really like each other.
Yeah.
So
there's like that's like a match I found between a guy called the Great Antonio and Inoki.
Antonio Inoki, when he was alive, owned. Is he still alive, Inoki? I can't remember, but New Japan. New Japan Pro Wrestling for a long time, which is the Japanese equivalent of WWE.
Right.
There's a lot of... Wrestling's huge in Japan and reported as a legitimate sport. And everyone who works in Japan is a lot stiffer and tougher.
It's treated much more like a sport than...
Yeah, I mean, it's still predetermined.
Yeah.
But if you watch a Japanese wrestler punching another Japanese wrestler in America, it's you're using the fleshy part of the forearm. In Japan, you're just probably going to learn how to get punched.
Yeah, well, it's like that Filipino boxer Manny Pacquiao. There's something about it. Like in his training, he loves getting hit with massive bamboo sticks to toughen him up. And his American trainer just goes, it's probably not good for him, but he likes to do it. But you can see he's made out of teak. Yeah. That's what the Japanese guys are like.
Well, the way of training in Japan is different than America. So in America or the UK, you find someone who's willing to train you, you train for a bit, and then you hope that a bigger company wants you and you progress your career like that.
Yeah.
In Japan, you go and sleep in a dojo. Legit do. It's like it's some Karate Kid shit. It's amazing, right? You legit go and sleep in a dojo, and when you're, they're called young boys. So Finn Balor. In WWE,
yep.
Fergal, when he was training, he trained in Japan,
okay.
And he lived as a young boy. So you'd sit there, you'd come to training, you'd clean the gym, you'd live in the gym. You are not allowed to wear. You have to wear plain black trunks and plain black boots. You lose every match you have for about 2 or 3 years, and then eventually, if they see enough in you, they go, "You can start winning now."
Oh my god!
You can start having you all young boys. So all like newer wrestlers in Japan have the same finisher. Which is a Boston Crab.
Same finishing move.
Same finishing move, which is a Boston Crab, which they never use because they never win. and that's what they keep doing until eventually they allow you to... There's a half American guy in David Finlay, who's Fit Finlay's son, who's currently a young boy in Japan who's just starting to be allowed to win matches, and an American guy called Jay White. And again, plain black trunks all the time. And
you can't develop your character.
You're not allowed a character. Then, which is why when they do get given characters often there, wacky as anything.
That's like, I don't sound daft, that sounds like clowning. You know, people go off to France just to be told they're shit for 3 years and not funny. And then suddenly you get to be allowed to be funny.
And it's the Great Antonio match you're talking about is...
It is hilarious.
Well, Great Antonio was an overweight Canadian man who went over there and was apparently really unhygienic and really rude to all the Japanese people and a little bit of a racist.
Yeah.
So Inoki decided to kick the shit out of him. And it's really embarrassing to watch.
It's really horrible because it sort of looks like one guy is a proper professional wrestler and the other is just a drunken hobo.
I think the Great Antonio was a drunken hobo.
Yeah.
What's interesting about Inoki is Inoki's been in a series of weird matches like this. So he was in a match with Muhammad Ali.
Yes, he was.
Where,
what? Yes,
where,
he was.
So in when Vince McMahon Jr., who currently runs the WWE, wanted to start making his own money, his dad owned WWE at the time, WWWF as it was in the late 70s.
What was the extra W for?
Worldwide Wrestling Federation. So he wanted to start making money, so he wanted to do these closed circuit screenings in cinemas of Muhammad Ali, the best boxer in the world, against Antonio Inoki, the best wrestler in the world.
Yeah.
Right, and it was going to be in Japan. And it was going to be amazing. The problem is,
it was in 1976, and Ali was the reigning WBC and WBA world champion at the time.
And what the problem is neither side let the other side know that it was a work.
Yeah.
So what happened is Muhammad Ali wasn't going to lose, and Inoki wasn't going to lose.
And they assumed the other side were aware that that was the rules.
So you have 6 or 7 rounds of Muhammad Ali standing up and dancing around the ring, and Inoki on his back in an amateur wrestling position with running spikes on, kicking Muhammad Ali in the shins while Muhammad Ali is going, "Get up, motherfucker, get up." That's what happened.
Ali didn't throw a punch until the 7th round of 12. There were only 6 punches thrown in the whole thing.
It's rotten. And it nearly bankrupted Vince McMahon Jr., so the guy now owns WWE. He made several mistakes in business, that being one of them. Another one owning a minor league ice hockey team. Until
he owned the Frozen Ducks. Mighty Ducks.
Mighty Ducks.
Frozen Ducks.
Delicious.
That would be a better name. It would be a much better name.
My favorite thing about the Ali fight, they had some sort of scoring system where Inoki got 3 points for what he was doing, but he was docked 3 for foul play, so that both sides could eventually say, Inoki could say, "Oh well, I won," and Ali could say, "Oh no, he cheated, so I won," and they could both go away without having really lost face. But the undercard for that match was Andre the Giant against the boxer Chuck Wepner.
Oh, amazing.
And it was, again, a wrestler versus a boxer. And Andre won the match by picking Chuck Wepner up and throwing him out of the ring, apparently.
Which is perfectly acceptable.
Yeah.
Inoki, as well, he was in the longest wrestling match of all time. Which I think is, I think 4.5 hours long.
Yeah, so the longest pro wrestling
match. On a desert island. On a deserted desert island in Japan. Yeah. And it was shown live on Japanese television.
Oh my god. I can beat you on this. I found the longest wrestling match recorded is, because this is an amateur one, the 1912 Stockholm Olympics.
Nice.
The match to decide the, it was a semi-final match, if you like, between Martin Klein of Russia, now Estonia, but Russia at the time, and Alfred Asikainen, who was Finnish. And it was in the Greco-Roman middleweight class, and they fought for 11 hours and 40 minutes.
But this is why professional wrestling is now rigged, mm-hmm. is because of what amateur wrestling was super popular. Like, in the same way that UFC is popular now, it was seen as an alternative combat sport to the more dangerous bare-knuckle boxing.
Yeah.
But the problem was, is matches would go on for ages. Half a day. Because once you're in a hold, if the two equally matched people, so like George Hackenschmidt, the Russian liner, is one of the first world champions, like he'd just sit in these holds for hours and hope that the other person would just sod off.
Yeah. Well, the result of this one, Klein won that fight and then wasn't able to take part in the final because he was so exhausted. Yeah. Oh, so the medal went to a Swedish guy who was the home favourite. And neither of them fought in another Olympics. But again, after that.
In the 30s, they got an ex-American football star who, and I forget his name now, but he was the first one who was given a rigged title win because they just went, we make money if we do this. Yeah. In the same way that, you know, there's huge elements of boxing and UFC that I'm sure are pantomimed for effect. Like, UFC at the minute is experiencing a professional wrestler as their biggest star. I mean, I know he's not, strictly speaking, a professional wrestler, but Conor McGregor is a professional wrestler in terms of how he does promos.
He turned up yesterday...
He turned up yesterday and went, it was 10 minutes late, and went, sorry, I'm late, I don't give a fuck. That's his opening line.
If only you could say that at every meeting.
That's why I don't have a real job anymore. Turns up wearing a fur coat, steals the other person's title. Like, he's a wrestling villain.
Yeah.
But people love him because they're like, oh, he's cheeky. But no, he's a dick. That's the point.
Yeah, oh, he's an absolute heel. Mm. Yeah, absolute heel. I knew that one.
Yeah, that's a good one. Good one.
The new term I learned for this podcast was jobber, which I didn't know about.
Yeah.
So, like, jobber is someone who's basically a professional loser. And what I like that about this is you can be a clean jobber when you lose and make the other guy look good. Or if you're not very good at it, if you're a part-timer, you're called a carpenter, which I fucking love. Or my favourite WWE phrase, if someone's really shit, then the commentators will go, oh, there's Barry McStay, he's a local competitor. Yeah. Which is a brilliant way.
Like they just picked him out of the crowd.
Well, yeah.
The way that you used to get noticed by WWE was you would come in and you would be local talent who, they used to have things called squash matches, which is where the big stars would beat someone in 2 minutes. And there was never television matches that really meant anything. It was just the big shows that meant something. And that's how you used to get noticed. So nearly everyone that has been a star over the last couple of decades, that's how they will have had their first match in WWE. They would have got murdered by someone in 2 minutes. And then one day they went, And you can go on YouTube and find loads and loads of people's first ever WWE matches. And they don't do that now because they have a big professional performance centre where people go and get trained and then all of a sudden they're just...
They emerge more fully formed.
Yeah, they come up and they're already big stars.
Yeah.
But they still need someone to lose the matches. And I love the idea of just some dude who every now and again gets asked to... There's a really good autobiography by a wrestler called Bobby Blaze called Have Boots Will Travel, who's always been a jobber. And his entire career, I think he's been a champion in a couple of tiny regional promotions, but his whole career is being paid to get beaten up by other people and making them look good.
Well, the thing is with the jobbers, that the important thing is that you still have to be a good one. You still have to be able to sell being hit and being and all that. Because I've looked at a couple of videos of people saying, oh, worst jobber in the world. Have you seen the video of Judo Joe Black?
No.
Oh, God. He's a guy, first of all, he's not a judoka. He's just wearing a judo outfit. And
that's enough to say you do it.
Yeah, exactly. he only made one appearance in WWF against Ken Patera, who was quite a big name in the 80s.
And quite a rough wrestler, because Ken Patera was a legitimate athlete as well.
Yeah, 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 proper buff. And go Google it if you're at home. The delayed reactions on some of the hits that Judo Joe Black takes are comically bad. Like, seconds delay. And then sort of getting hit and moving his head the wrong way and all that sort of, it's embarrassing. He did this one fight and never sort of appeared again.
There's sometimes it's fun in that someone can get in someone's ear and say to them, you don't need to lose this. So there was a tag team called the Skyscrapers in WCW. One half of them was a wrestler called Sid Vicious / Sid Justice / Psycho Sid, who's a big man who once shit himself in the middle of a match.
He pulled a Gary Lineker.
Quite a famous story about him shitting himself.
After a particular move, or
yeah,
just...
I forget which show it's on, but everyone, it's a very common old wives' tale about wrestling. A man who once jumped off the... He was a very tall bloke. He was 6'11", once jumped off the top rope and snapped his leg. In a match you can see on the WWE Network.
No, thanks.
They've left it up.
No, thanks.
He would go from WWF to WCW, their competitors at the time, all the time, flip back and forth. A lot of
people
do
that, didn't they? Yeah.
But he'd wrestle for 3 or 4 months and then go, I want to go and play softball. Like, genuinely, that's what he did. He was actually quite an entertaining wrestler, and he was a big country boy, and he had this kind of charisma that oozed from him. He wasn't a great wrestler, but had this charisma. But he was in a tag team with, originally, a guy called Mark Calloway, who became The Undertaker.
Yes.
Oh, right? Cool. Yeah.
And then a guy called Danny Spivey, who had a very short-lived character called Waylon Mercy in WWE, who was based around the villain from Cape Fear. And it's a brilliant gimmick. So good, like smiling and apologising for stuff while clearly being a monster. Yeah, yeah.
It's important just to say, if listeners don't know, sometimes a wrestler isn't always the one character. So you say, The Undertaker, the guy who's The Undertaker, will have had several different characters.
Yeah, absolutely. People change all the time.
And, yeah.
So... Danny Spivey and Sid Vicious are in a tag team. They come out to wrestle a team of two jobbers. And one guy's been really cooperative. There's another guy who I think had a drink. Who is not selling. So he's
substance abuse in professional wrestling.
So he's
surprised me.
He's being like chokeslammed and like popping straight back up. Like not selling the moves at all. No selling, no pain, just getting straight back up.
Yeah.
And at the end of the match, when the bell's rung, they take him outside and one of them holds him while the other guy hits, and Teddy Long, their manager, just punch him in the stomach for 5 minutes because he couldn't be bothered to sell anything. He just went, nope, this is my big chance. I'm going to show him I'm a legitimate athlete. And two big lads went, you fucking what?
Really the way to advance your career.
Yeah, you're probably not going to work here again, mate, to be honest. But yeah, I mean, it's...
You've got to play the dead bodies before you get to play the detectives.
Well, that's a nice way of putting it. That's a lovely way of putting it.
Yeah, I just thought of that just then.
So, like, you mentioned gimmicks. The worst losing record that I could find was from 2014, a guy called Damien Sandow. He lost 153 matches in a year.
Wow.
The weirdest one, though, is the same year. Kane, big fucking Undertaker's brother Kane, he lost 132 matches. When I was a kid, Kane was terrifying.
Mm.
But... Kane is the sort of person... See, winning and losing doesn't make any sense. In the case of Damien Sandow, he was still super popular. His gimmick was... Because you can give someone a gimmick of losing.
Right.
Because then people are desperate to see them win.
Yeah, yeah.
When I was a kid, there was a guy called Barry Horowitz, who was a jobber. And he won a match on telly once, and people went mental for it. And everyone went, oh, hello. Here's an idea. On SmackDown at the minute, there's a guy called James Ellsworth. Uh-huh. Who appeared as an local enhancement talent on a show, and the internet went a bit mad because he's got, you know, Gail on Coronation Street's not really got a chin. James Ellsworth is essentially that. I mean, he's probably got slightly less unruly children, but he's he's got no real chin, and people thought it was funny, and WWE went, you know what? This guy's blowing up social media. So he's now like a fun, lovable loser, and he's had a win over really important big stars and stuff like that. So you sometimes can do that. With Kane, Kane's kind of office staff there now, so he doesn't need to win. It makes someone else look good. And the other thing you've got to bear in mind is the only matches that really matter are the ones on television. WWE have countless things called house shows a week, which is
unbroadcast stuff.
Yeah, unbroadcast, and it's the same. You can go to... So they're in WWE in the UK at the minute, and you can go to a show in Newcastle, and then it's the same show in Manchester the same night, the next night. Literally the same matches, the same finishes, the same spots, because it's not being broadcast.
Yeah.
And also those matches, they're going a lot less hard on themselves because it's, again, not a legitimate sport, but still quite painful.
Yeah.
Every time you take a flat back bump, On your back in the ring is the equivalent of being hit by a car at 20 miles an hour.
Really?
Yeah.
What if you just fall down yourself without being propelled?
Yeah, because all you're doing...
Because you've got to do the back, you have to fall
on your back, put your arms out to spread the weight and all that sort of stuff. No one's ever landed on the top of the head. If they are, they're not walking again.
Yeah.
You know, and learning to bump is a big thing. But when you first start out training and you take maybe 3 or 4 bumps in a training session, you can't walk for the rest of the week. I've said that, especially the guys who do death matches and stuff like that, it's a weird form of self-harm that some people have got. And the attack, like I would love, I think when I was a teenager, I wanted to be, in order, a professional wrestler, a rock star, and a comedian.
Two or three's not bad.
Yeah, and I nearly went to America to train to wrestle. I'd sorted it all out and I'd saved up money from my job and everything. I was going to go to America and train to be a wrestler. And then I realised I've got no coordination or athletic skills. And so didn't. Like, I can, fitness wise, I'm probably fit, just about fit enough to be an all right wrestler, but I don't have no coordination.
You could be the return of Judo Joe Black, though.
Oh, it'd be so good. So good. To me, I always look at wrestlers, especially when they've really got a crowd in the palm of their hand, and go, oh, I'd love to do that. I'm jealous of it. But you know, I get to be a ring announcer, so it's nearly enough.
Yeah, because they get to do it just like what they do in their bodies. I always think of wrestlers as being like free form stuntmen.
Yeah, it's odd. Like nowadays, you can apply and go to a school.
Yeah,
but back when you've got people like how Steve Austin became a wrestler was just someone went, well, you were a decent college level football star. And you like wrestling, why don't you come along? But people often weren't smartened up to it not being real.
Yeah.
So they were just like, they'd be like, I'm doing really well and I'm winning all these matches, and weren't told they were like,
oh my God,
the people were lying down for them. It's like that episode of Futurama where Bender's a wrestler and doesn't realise. it's mad how legitimised the business is now because there's so many autobiographies and stuff like that that people have read.
My favourite thing about Steve Austin, everyone would know Stone Cold Steve Austin is his name, and he's a sort of like ruthless killer character. I read a couple of the names that Vince McMahon suggested for him before he hit on Stone Cold Steve Austin.
Yeah, I've got one straight in my head.
Otto Von Ruthless.
Yeah.
Ice Dagger. And Fang McFrost.
Oh, mine is Chili McFreeze.
They knew kind of what they wanted.
Chili McFreeze works with the frozen ducks.
Yeah, it does.
And then it was something. The story is his wife had a cup of tea and said it was stone cold.
Yeah, because he was married to a British lady.
Yeah, yeah.
Who has just written an autobiography about living with him because he's been married. He's on his fourth wife now, I think.
Right.
He was married to a lady called Jeannie Clark, who, when he first met, wrestling's really weird like this. So Steve Austin's wife, Jeannie Clark, I think she was his second wife. She was married to Gentleman Chris Adams, who was a British wrestler who lived in Texas, who trained Steve Austin.
Oh, wow.
And there was a point where they were tag team partners, and he was obviously nailing his wife.
Yeah.
And then they got together, and he doesn't have a great record with wives.
He's got a better record than Chris Benoit does.
Oh, God,
oh,
yeah.
You went there with that.
Yeah, I did.
I didn't realise that. So Chris Benoit was quite a big... who has very little knowledge of wrestling, was a name I knew was a wrestler's name.
And Chris Benoit, and this is the really difficult thing, so when I'm doing my wrestling podcast and you want to put together lists of amazing matches, Chris Benoit was one of the greatest wrestlers to ever walk the face of the earth.
Yeah.
But did kill his wife and son.
Yeah.
So, you always, every time you talk about him, you have to apologise. And I was in Norway recently, and I bumped into Glenn Wool because I was doing a comedy festival there, and I'd not seen Glenn in ages. And Glenn is Canadian and a wrestling fan.
Mm-hmm.
And it's weird, comedy's made me realise a lot of my friends are wrestling fans, because in this job, it's much more acceptable to talk about wrestling than it is when I worked in an office. It was not acceptable to talk about wrestling. Yeah. And I said to Glenn is responsible for one of my favourite jokes ever. My favourite, and it was right after the Chris Benoit murder. And he went on stage at the old post office gig in Shrewsbury in front of about 100 people. And the only person who really laughed at this joke was me. Right? And they're my favourite jokes. And he goes on and goes, heard about Chris Benoit choking his wife to death. Why didn't she just tap out? Like, that is the greatest wrestling theme joke of all time. But it's weird how Chris Benoit's been written from history. You know,
WWE Network, because they aired a tribute, because initially it was reported as a suicide. He died.
And they didn't
suicide.
Know, and because it was the next day,
yeah,
they had a tribute.
The story came out.
Yeah. And it's not, that's not WWE's fault. WWE,
yeah, of course.
WWE gets a lot of grief about wrestlers dying young and stuff like that. But WWE doesn't make a bunch of lads have bad habits. So a lot of people will say, so there's loads of wrestlers from when I was little who died in their 40s.
Yes, yeah.
So Big Boss Man, Ultimate Warrior, Ravishing Rick Rude. There's a huge Yoko list of them. Yeah, and Yokozuna died because he saw a spider in a hotel room in Liverpool and had a heart attack.
Really?
That's genuinely how he died. He was in a really cheap economy hotel in Liverpool because his WWE had come to an end. He weighed about 60 stone. And there was a spider. He saw the spider, jumped, heart attack, died.
Wow. So in the same way that Danny Baker allegedly killed Bob Marley, Scouse has killed Yokozuna.
Yes, that's exactly what we're saying.
Pick up the wrong Yoko.
No podcast is ever going to have a better joke than that. But yeah, loads of wrestlers. So steroids always get blamed. And I'm not saying people should go out and do steroids. But... I watched a documentary recently about what steroids can do for you, and if you're part of your job is your body, and part of your job is you taking abuse all the time, and you need to recover quicker, then to my mind, certain things make sense like that. What was killing these wrestlers was not steroids are the big bad evil. Oh, boo, steroids! Mm. But people tend to forget about the large amounts of cocaine and the large amounts of somas, which are muscle relaxants, and the large amount of alcohol and painkiller. Painkiller addiction that was going on in these circles.
It's not hard to forget about them if you go back and watch some of the promos with Hulk Hogan in them. Sweet Jesus, the bug eyes.
He is pumped.
Yeah.
I love...
He's very litigious though, so I'm sure he was just had a lot of coffees.
Yeah, there was nothing else. I mean, one thing, you know, we can say, he's a massive racist. Because, you know, there's proof. But yeah, it is what it is. It's a lifestyle that... I've seen William Regal talk to trainees at my wrestling school about if you want to work for WWE, it's a lifestyle and you have to pretty much check out of wanting to see your kids or be married or live a happy life for the 5, 10, 15 years you're in WWE.
Yeah.
Because that just doesn't happen.
Playing softball.
Hey, Sid. Maybe that one day he went, maybe if I shit myself, they'll just let me go.
That is a good emergency call to put in a number of situations.
Uh-oh! I've got a game tomorrow!
It's the wrestling version of women's problems.
All I'm saying, Jim, is this is already the longest podcast we've ever recorded, so if I accidentally shit myself in about an hour's time... I want to talk about gimmicks, because there are so many astonishing gimmicks. The thing is, some of them aren't shit. Some of them are just... What I love in wrestling is the sense of humour.
Yeah.
Like, one of my favourite gimmicks I found was Amish Roadkill.
Oh, yeah. Because he was a big bearded dude who looked like he was Amish. So...
Yeah. Say what you see, kids.
Exactly. And he had one word that he would only ever say, and that word was chickens.
Nice. I like wrestlers who can only say one or two things.
The thing is, he was wrestling for ECW, who were based in Pennsylvania.
Which is why he got given
that gimmick. God, I'm a nerd.
Right, filling all the gaps in our
I am so nerdy.
It's astonishing. It's beautiful having a wrestling encyclopedia with us. There was a really bad woman wrestler called... So there was a bloke called the Fat Chick Thriller, who's...
Mike Awesome.
Mike Awesome, that's
dead now.
Yeah, I imagine that for a lot of the people I say now, you're just going to go, dead now.
Hulk Hogan's second cousin.
Oh,
I believe. Died suicide. I believe that happens a lot with wrestlers. Not to make it too dark, but again, it's a lonely lifestyle and it's a high pressure lifestyle. Mm. And if you're not at the top of the card and you're starting to worry about your job and you spend a lot of time in a hotel room on your own and you're high or whatever, that shit's going to happen. And I believe someone will probably correct me, but I believe Mike Awesome was a suicide, which is sad. He was great when he wrestled in Japan. Had a really good mullet.
Yeah, there's a lot of strong,
great mullet. But he got given some terrible gimmicks. The Fat Chick Thriller, that 70s guy was
the same guy.
Amazing.
Who was the woman associated with him?
She was called Nitro Beef Girl.
Which is what
literally
I call
literally the laughing cow.
Yes. It's what I call my penis. Whoa there, Nitro Beef Girl.
Rein it in.
Yeah.
What was her thing?
Just the name.
Just being a fat chick.
Nice, that sounds good.
That was, yeah. And then there's some really fucking dark gimmicks. There's Eugene,
I've met Eugene.
He's right. A nice guy.
Nick Dinsmore. Yeah,
I got the impression he's a nice guy. So Eugene, now I didn't know this about him until I read up on him, that he was one of the original Doink the Clowns, and I fucking loved Doink the Clowns.
He wasn't the original, that was Matt Bourne.
Yeah. Right.
And the original Doink the Clown was really disturbing and based around Pennywise from It. And then it got dafter and dafter and dafter because Matt Bourne was... how can we put this? A maverick nutcase backstage. So eventually WWE let him go and just went, we don't need you. We just put paint and the suit on someone else. You will still go to indie shows in the States now and there'll be someone dressed as fucking Doink the Clown there.
Yeah.
That's how, and for a gimmick that most people hate, like legitimately hate. If you go back and watch, there's a match between, it's on the WWE Network, a match between Doink the Clown and Marty Jannetty in about 1993 on a Raw that is wonderful, and you wouldn't expect it to be wonderful. I think they're both really high when they're doing it, but it's great. But most people don't see that sort of stuff. But Eugene had a slow gimmick, didn't he?
Yeah, he had learning difficulties, but he was a savant, so he would just be applauding himself and looking quite disturbed, and then would rip people to shit.
Yeah, it would be, to use that awful phrase termed "cripping up," as some people might say about actors.
No.
Yeah, it's just a horrible phrase.
Yeah, Eddie Redmayne, fuck you. Yeah.
This is a genuine story that I sometimes tell on stage. I did a gig once in Liverpool with a lad in the audience with Down syndrome called Paul, who dared me to take the piss out of him because it was his birthday. And I was really reticent because he had Down syndrome, and him and his brother and sister and mum and dad are all at the gig, begged me to take the piss out of him. So I did. And I got everyone to applaud him, and when everyone applauded him, he's called Paul, it's his birthday today, it's a very special day for Paul. Of course, every day is a special day for Paul. and everyone, you could hear everyone in the audience just go, no.
Yeah.
And me and Paul and all his family are laughing, and everyone then relaxed, and it was really lovely. And the whole point of me telling the story on stage is about how people instantly judge someone who's disabled, as I did, as did the whole audience. That's the point of it, and it's a true story, it's a very positive story. Me and Paul are still friends, and whenever I gig in Liverpool, I always invite him along. But afterwards, we did have a conversation where he asked if he'd done okay. And I went, that's really, what do you mean? And he went, because I was nervous, so I spazzed up especially. He actually said that phrase out loud. And I'm like, you are the greatest hero in British history. Yeah, so, it is. And it's weird, the kind of...
So the difference is that Nick Dinsmore is not special needs
in
any way.
No, and what's... I think what's unusual about that gimmick is
this was in 2004. It isn't even that long ago.
No, but he was really popular. Recent, yeah. And obviously a big part of what WWE do is go to see kids in schools and go to see sick kids in hospitals and look after disabled people really, really well.
Yeah.
And they're lovely like that. They do loads of stuff, the Make-A-Wish Foundation.
Number of small, very ill children who have pinned Triple H is astonishing. Yeah. Like, his loss record was ruined by that.
But it's amazing how they are with that. But at the same time, they were running with that gimmick.
Yeah.
But equally, sometimes some of the crowds they perhaps perform in front of in the south of America aren't necessarily that bright and wouldn't have got that it was a gimmick.
Yeah.
Oh, Christ. Yeah. That reminds the whole thing about Deep South of America, especially considering when we're recording. Stone Cold Steve Austin now remains the only professional wrestler in the entire world to have performed his finishing move on the President of the United States of America.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I reckon Barack Obama will have his time on the indies.
Yeah.
He'll work his way up. He'll do it the right way. There's some good indies in Chicago.
The big O.
Yeah, he'll be in. Michelle managing him, just distracting people at ringside. And I reckon he'd be really...
Force-feeding him greens.
I mean, and let's be honest, Donald Trump's sell of the Stone Cold Stunner, which everyone knows how to sell a Stone Cold Stunner, which is it's hit you in the jaw, you pop up backwards and you take a flat back bump.
Yep.
His sell-off of it is shit. If his presidency is anywhere near as good as his sell of a Stone Cold Stunner, then we're all doomed.
Yeah, he's a businessman. He's meant to be good at selling things, but not that.
No, and he is good at selling things, unless they're loans or gym membership.
Bullshit.
Or steaks.
Bullshit. Excellent bullshit merchant.
Or any of the other businesses that he's made go bankrupt. So, yeah.
Well, we promised ourselves we wouldn't do this.
Yeah, yeah. right, I feel like I should come to, who I'm going to pick. There's so fucking many. One tiny honourable mention for a Japanese wrestler called Yingling the Erotic Terrorist. I don't know what she was like as a wrestler, but I need to mention it purely for this story.
She'll blow you, then blow you up.
So she...
I'm changing my name to Yingling. Weirdly, this has reminded me of another Japanese one, which when I come to... I've got a definitive choice for mine, but I've now got another couple of stories that I need to
tell. Wasn't Yingling an Olympic sport? Isn't that a sailing
I thought Yingling like... makes her sound like she's a panda.
That would be...
And we all know they're never erotic terrorists.
Explains the black eye, though. Oh...
That would be an astonishing gimmick, just to be a panda.
Wrong, WWF.
Oh, yeah. So she was one match in, so she got knocked out, and then a guy called Muta the Great came in and spat his signature green mist into her vagina.
What?
This is
that's...
I know what promotion this is in.
Right.
Spat his signature green mist into her vagina.
Muta has... He's been around for years. He's a wrestler called Keiji Muto. Right. And his signature thing is spitting mist into people's faces, which is a big Japanese thing. The colours of the mist denotes how poisonous they are. Black mist would be the worst because it would legitimately blind you.
Right.
The way he does the mist, and he's used the mist in nearly all of his matches in his entire career, is he will fill a condom full of food colouring, keep it in his mouth for the entire match, and then when he needs it, bite down on it, get the mist, and then do it.
Wow. It's cracking stagecraft.
Yeah.
Stagecraft.
But I'm familiar with... This is from a promotion called Hustle, isn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, that's the one. Hustle, Hustle Promotions. And that's only halfway through the story. what the green mist did inside her vagina was it impregnated her. In the following week, she gave birth to an egg, which then hatched to reveal the 514-pound wrestler, Master Benno.
Oh, good God.
Who is... a legitimate sumo wrestler called Akebono, who has appeared in WWE.
People getting pregnant on wrestling. You will know Mae Young, who is a famous American wrestler, female wrestler, major wrestling star, and important for developing female wrestling in the 40s and 50s and into the 60s. But she sort of had a late resurgence in association with
WWE. Because
she
was a nutcase. She was a genuinely one of the hardest human beings who's ever lived.
Yeah,
really? Like 80 years old being powerbombed through tables.
Yeah.
Did not
give a shit. Fucking hell.
Yeah, didn't care. Mixing it with the younger wrestlers and everything. But she gave birth twice on... I can't remember if it was WWE. Yeah, probably
it was WWE.
To the child of... Mark Henry. Sexual chocolate Mark Henry. He's the world's strongest man. And she gave birth to a human hand.
Yes, she did.
Which was her offspring with him. And then about 10 years
later... What's known as a reverse fisting.
And then gave birth like 10 years later to Hornswoggle, who's a midget wrestler, is that right?
Yes, he is.
From Baby New Year, I think they called him.
Oh, one of my favourite wrestling moments ever. Because the thing that I love most in wrestling is a Royal Rumble.
Royal Rumble's great.
There's the last Royal Rumble I watched. At one point in the ring, you had Hornswoggle, all 3'6" of him, whatever, faced the Great Khali, who was a 7-foot-plus wrestler, and Hornswoggle gets Great Khali out of the ring over the top rope.
Yeah.
It's not beautiful.
You mentioned Hustle. Hustle was a promotion in Japan. So Japanese wrestling is treated as a legitimate sport.
Yeah.
A couple of promotions, Hustle being one, another one called DDT, try and do sports entertainment. But if you ever go to Harajuku Park in Tokyo, where they've taken various bits of Western culture, and they've taken, so you've got the guys who dress up like they're in a greasy biker gang, and they've taken it to a whole new level of, we've taken Western culture, but we're so far removed from Western culture, the isolated nation that is Japan, that we've made it Western culture times 10, mental insanity, right? Which is probably the name of one of Hustle shows. And that's
the name of 2016.
That's what DDT's equivalent of a Royal Rumble. They had a 120-man battle royal where various people were being eliminated and then coming back in disguise, right? And everyone knows, so it's allowed to be nuts. Hustle had a wrestler for a long time called Razor Ramon Hard Gay. That was his name. Right?
Is Razor Ramon is...
No, it's not Razor Ramon. It's not Scott Hall. It's not the original Razor Ramon. It's a guy who's a fan of Razor Ramon and also happens to be gay and have an indestructible penis.
Oh my God, no, I've seen that wrestling match where the guy, if it's the guy I'm thinking of, there's a wrestler grabs his penis and then he throws him with his penis.
No, that's Joey Ryan, who is still wrestling in America. So But they would have, like, transform... So he'd, like, he'd come in and he'd be being beaten up, and then all of a sudden he'd get hit in the nuts, and he would, like... He would evolve like a Power Ranger.
Yeah. My secret's out, guys.
And they'd have proper video of him doing this, and all of a sudden he'd be in the most stereotypical gay outfit possible. So he'd have like a leather cap on. He'd look like the lead singer of Judas Priest, right? And then all of a sudden he'd be completely unstoppable.
So is Yingling the erotic terrorist your worst wrestler, or... Do you have a final... What about the guy who blew the gas into her vagina?
No, it's... Jesus Christ, no.
He's one of the greatest legitimate wrestlers of all time.
I can't do that. Like it's just an amazing story. No, the one I went for is one who I think mixes together a really quite tasteless gimmick and a terrible finishing move. It was a guy called Kamala.
Oh.
The Ugandan Giant.
The Ugandan Giant.
Got 1 foot now.
I like your response. I think we could name any wrestler, and your response would be dead. Suicide. Only got 1 foot.
Got diabetes, isn't it?
Yeah.
Genuinely has. I'm not making it up.
Wait, was that legitimate diabetes or was it a gimmick diabetes?
No, it's not gimmick diabetes. I mean, that is living for the gimmick. There's been more than one Kamala, though. So.
Oh my god. So what is he like, Trigger's broom in Only Fools and Horses?
Yes.
Like,
yeah, but with different legs.
Yeah.
So when Kamala, was he in America or?
He was in America. His real name was Jim Harris, and he had really shit nicknames like Sugar Bear, Ugly Bear, and Big. And he would come on. He claimed to be a former bodyguard of Idi Amin. That's not a happy backstory.
You've got to bear in mind, where he was doing this gimmick was in Memphis. Racist as fuck.
Well, yeah, he came to the stage like wearing like this huge war mask with a spear.
Oh my god!
And a loincloth. And you take
what was his name? His real name again?
His real name is Jim Harris.
Jim Harris.
And he would be wearing this white face paint, and he looks so sad. Like, it's one thing not to be able to sell what you're doing, but you could see behind his eyes him going, what the fuck am I doing?
What I'd say, and this is me trying desperately to win this competition, what I'd say is, in Memphis, where he debuted that gimmick, they sold out arenas based around him because he was genuinely seen as a... They used to do, and it's very racist, they used to do the whole kind of wild man sort of gimmick. They did a lot with the Samoan guys, and with him, people just went nuts for him, especially because I think a lot of them went, wasn't he called Sugar Bear last week? he was a normal bloke.
You put some white face paint on him, you think we still don't recognise him?
He used to have two stars painted over his nipples and a moon over his belly.
Yeah. Oh what?
But he also had a WWE run out of it.
Yeah.
Did he?
Which did nothing.
As
Kamala.
He feuded with The Undertaker at one point. Because they had to make an extra big coffin for the death of the casket match they're having.
Oh, come on. That's just a little bit like Bradford City getting into the Premier League. And it's like, well done, lads.
See you next year.
The three shit things about him, and I'll let Barry talk about his. His finishing move was terrible. He had one which is called the armpit claw, which is where you would just lock onto someone's armpit and squeeze it until they went, that's really painful. Yeah. Stop it now. That's not a showstopper.
Yeah.
He, to try and humanise him at one point, his manager, called Reverend Slick, took him bowling. That was the thing to try and show that this wild man was actually an American.
Like they had a bit where they filmed him bowling.
Yeah. And then,
they used to do shit like that a lot.
Yeah, they've got a lot of time to fill.
There's a rule in wrestling as well, someone wheels out a cake, someone's going in the cake.
He did. Oh,
it's like
Chekhov's gun.
If there's a cake in the ring, someone's going in the cake.
Hogan's cake. Which
is the name of one of his videos.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, no.
No, we've all been not thinking about it. Now I can't stop thinking of pink elephants.
Oh, the thought of him hulking up before he get... Anyway.
That's not a 24-inch pipe.
The other thing he did, we talked about Andre the Giant earlier. I love Andre the Giant. It's impossible not to love Andre the Giant.
I call everyone boss because that's what he used to do.
Yeah. Really?
Like, genuinely, you'll find, if I text people a lot and use boss. Or I call people champ because I'm a wrestling promoter. Mm. And that's how you talk to people. And I call people boss because he did.
Does that mean that all kebab shop owners love Andre the Giant?
Yes.
Good. Easy question, easy answer. Kamala pulled, lost two matches to Andre the Giant, and both times he pulled a magnum, the gun, not the,
not
ice, cream.
The ice cream.
Come here, big fella! It's white chocolate!
He knew he couldn't resist!
Gonna feed him into submission.
Yeah.
Oh, this one's peanut butter and he's got an allergy. My choice for the worst wrestler of all time, it comes from Japan, because there's plenty of bad wrestlers. And before, when I was talking to my wrestler friends, I said I was coming here, and one of them suggested something. There's and this isn't my choice. There's a wrestler called Dirt Bike Kid who's American, and he was an independent wrestler in the late 90s, early noughties. Mm-hmm. And he had an all right reputation, but was particularly sloppy in the ring and hurt a lot of people. He was wrestling in a tournament in, I believe, in DDT or another Japanese company, where everyone in this tournament was a masked wrestler. And if you lost your match in this tournament, you'd have to take your mask off.
Right.
So the Dirt Bike Kid, who wrestles with like a kind of dirt bike sort of mask on, he's wrestling a wrestler called the Great Sasuke, who has since been a member of the Japanese Diet, the parliament there.
Yeah, yeah.
In his mask. I'm not making that shit up.
He's been in
suit and mask, fucking brilliant.
In parliament.
In their parliament.
Can I also say, Inoki, who we mentioned earlier, was also elected to the Japanese parliament.
Atsushi Anita, Hiroshi Haze, all these people who are very good wrestlers, were...
I'm very disappointed not to have seen Giant Haystack selected.
I'm very much looking forward to seeing Tyson Fury be our next Chancellor of the Exchequer.
The way the world's going. So, they have this match. And Sasuke is a little guy who... Sasuke means ninja. Mm-hmm. So he dresses kind of as a ninja, but with a mask on. Sasuke's a fantastic wrestler. Wrestled a bit for WWE. But he's, like most Japanese wrestlers, he's hard as nails. Mm-hmm. Dirt Bike Kid gets in the ring. Normally doesn't wrestle under a mask. So he gets in the ring, and the first thing he does as Force of Habit is take his mask off, which he's not meant to do until he loses the match. Sasuke, whose promotion it is, gets in the ring with him and just goes, right, fuck you, and murders him. So good. He like kicks him in the face until he falls over, gets him, and then just puts him in a grommet, which is a legitimate horrible chokehold that old school wrestlers used to do.
Yeah.
Puts him in a grommet until he's literally flailing around, taps out. This match that's meant to go 10 minutes lasts 2 minutes. He gets up, kicks him in the ribs a couple of times. Sasuke just gets out the ring, I presume, in Japanese, going, for fuck's sake.
Bloody amateur.
The worst wrestler of all time. I have a friend called called Matthew, who is from Newcastle.
Is he your worst wrestler of all
time?
No,
he's not. He makes videos called Botchamania.
Uh-huh.
And you can look these up. They're not really on YouTube. They tend to get taken down because of the copyrighted content on them. But they're often on Vimeo and Dailymotion and stuff like that. Where he basically points out mistakes in wrestling matches.
Yeah,
now, some of them will be continuity errors. Some of them will be people messing up commentary or whatever. And they genuinely give me the most amusement in the world. And there's been progress stuff on them. I'm fine with that.
Yeah.
Right. For example, we had a tables match once where the tables we've been sent by the people who give us tables or our chair hire company, they've given us tables but without the wooden support underneath. So every time someone breathed on a table, it would break. and it got quite silly. But Matthew's been putting these videos together for years. And in one of these videos is where I first saw the wrestler I'm going to tell you about. Tall wrestlers often aren't the best, right? Nope. There's a reason for this, is because you are. There was a wrestler in WCW and WWE called Giant Gonzalez who was... a basketball player from Argentina, sadly no longer with us, who, bless him, tried his best but wasn't very good. The guy who owned All Japan Pro Wrestling in Japan, so Inoki's rival company, was a guy called Giant Baba, who was big and intimidating and 6'8", which is big for a Japanese wrestler, but most of his moves didn't look like they'd break an egg, but he was a huge star there. He had two matches once against... a guy from Pakistan who was 7'2".
I think I've seen this.
Called Raja Lion.
Yeah, I've seen this. This is brilliant.
Who was a film star in Pakistan. Now, if I tell you 7'2" bloke from Pakistan, you're going to think of someone akin to the Great Khali, who, bless him, was tall, but not a good wrestler. But the thing with the Great Khali was, at least he was an imposing presence. He used to be a policeman. He was genuinely big. He worked out. might not have been the greatest wrestler in the world, but sometimes you just need that spectacle of a big guy, because you look at the big guy and go, wow, he's huge. Mm-hmm. That's amazing. Because wrestling is a circus, and you can't just have, you can't have eight matches of trapeze artists. Yeah. You've got to have everything. You've got to have the clowns, and you've got to have the high wire. You've got to have everything. So they, All Japan, found this this Raja Lion guy and clearly went, if we train him and we put him against Giant Baba, this will be amazing. Because he's 4 inches taller than Giant Baba. And if we bill him as 7'5", no one's going to question him. Yeah. What they proceeded to have, and you can find the Raja Lion matches, the worst wrestling matches in the history of wrestling. In the absolute, there's some terrible divas matches in WWE where fairly untrained models who've been told to be wrestlers kind of have pillow fights and whatever. And WWE have come back from that now and have legitimate women's wrestling, and it's brilliant because Ronda Rousey has revolutionised women's sport.
Yeah, yeah.
But Raja Lion, the first time I watched him, like, he can... Walking down the aisle is a feat for him.
You know those videos you see of, like, the walls, the world's tallest man, and they always look like they're walking on stilts because they're so far away from the ground. He walks exactly like that.
There are 7 foot tall wrestlers who are brilliant. The Undertaker's nearly 7 foot tall. Yeah. He's brilliant. Sid was nearly 7 foot tall. And, you know, had problems with his bowels and liked softball, but was brilliant. But Raja Lion, like, he had thinner arms than me and thinner legs than me. He didn't look like a wrestler. He looked like a man who worked in a bank had been stretched and then told to wrestle. Like, his punches, like, I could hit you with work punches now that didn't go anywhere near you that would look more convincing than the things he did. He cannot do anything.
His kicks are brilliant. They're like a... You know, if you're sitting on a chair and you want to close the door but you can't be bothered to get up and sort of slide down the chair and reach out with your foot and give the door a push? That's what his kicks look like.
But everyone who's wrestling him has been told to make him look like $1 million. So he isn't. Like, Giant Baba is, who's bad anyway, but was a legend. He's just watching it going, oh, this is dreadful. And the best thing is they gave him that one match.
Yeah, yeah.
And then they went, sure, this is just an anomaly. Let's give him another go. I know comedians who've been booked for weekends at clubs and they've gone on in front of a terrible audience at a Christmas gig and it's not been their fault and they've struggled a little bit and then they've had a phone call and gone, we're not using for the rest of the weekend, we're replacing you. And that's harsh, right?
Yeah.
But these are people who are good at their jobs. They've just had an off day.
Yeah.
People have off days all the time. Triple H is one of the greatest wrestlers of all time. He had a match with Scott Steiner once, who's one of the greatest wrestlers of all time. Less so towards the latter end of his career, but at the beginning of his career, genuinely brilliant. They had a match in WWE that is awful, but it's because it's two people who are good having an off day.
Bad day, yeah.
That
yeah.
happens. Raja Lion has never had an on day. Like, it just... I implore you to go and watch his matches and then tweet me and tell me how bad they are.
They
are so unbelievably bad. And
he's got a slightly embarrassed, shy facial expression about him as well. He's not even like he's not even setting it up like in his face.
Because that's the thing. If someone makes, you know, William Regal's really good at telling people this. If you make everything, if you've got a vicious look on your face and you make everything look, and then you've got a proper pained look on your face when you're taking a beating, brilliant. But he's literally just like, you can see his brain going, I need to throw a punch now. Punch. I think I'll do one of them kicks now. Yeah.
He's Eugene, but he's gone method. Oh, really painful.
It's a surprise that he didn't have a career anywhere else.
Well, you know me, I like to read around the subject a little bit. So I was looking at styles of wrestling around the world, and I looked at some Japanese wrestling and some American wrestling and some Lucha Libre, which is the Mexican one with the masks. And then I discovered Turkish oil wrestling. I don't know if any of you guys have watched any, but I mean, I was doing this with my husband sitting on the couch nearby, and I did feel really guilty. Like, I wasn't researching anymore. Yeah. I was having a cheeky porn break. Because if anyone hasn't seen Turkish oil wrestling, it's the national sport in Turkey.
Yeah, they're proud of it.
Very, very proud. The annual Kirkinpar competition in Turkey has been held since 1362. It's the oldest continuous sanctioned sport event anywhere in the world. basically you are oiled up wearing these three-quarter length sort of leather, or not leather, but sort of hand sewn stitched lederhosen, so the kind of like smart capri pants for the for the wrestler about town. And the way you win,
they just look like a normal pair of top man jeans.
Yeah. Just like, yeah, rolled up. They've got skins out, shoes off. Yeah. They're playing ultimate frisbee in the park. But they're covered in olive oil. And the way you win is by getting your hand down the leg of the other person's trousers. Yeah. So it is just, a lot of the time is spent in a grapple with each other. And it's just two guys basically reaching into each other's crotches.
And then
sort of leaning against each other for a moment while they gather their breath, and then go again a bit deeper.
Do you reckon there's a guy over there who's got the worst win-loss record because he just likes having the hand down his trousers? Yeah.
Oh no, you've beaten me again.
Oh, I'm so clumsy.
But this is another one of those things. They could go on for days, the matches in this, because I mean it's quite difficult. They're quite long legs to get down. And so they have to cap the length of matches now at 30 to 40 minutes.
Yep.
And they have a point scoring system in case no one actually manages to succeed in doing it. Then I also discovered that Turkey has camel wrestling, guys. Genuinely what it is. Camels?
Are the camels being ridden by jockeys?
No, just camels fighting. Two male camels fighting each other. They sort of butt each other with their necks. The way they used to induce them to fight was it would be mating season and they'd have a female camel nearby, so they'd put two males to be rivals for them. Then they thought, that's a bit cruel. We'll just starve them a little bit and make them really aggressive towards each other.
I'd love to see Turkish ESPN. Up next, oil wrestling. 9 o'clock, camel wrestling. 10 o'clock, horse punching.
Geordies would be world champions.
and then once I sort of done the... also, I discovered that... do you know Henry VIII and at the Field of the Cloth of Gold? Henry VIII and King Francis of France wrestled each other.
Abraham Lincoln was a wrestler as well.
Yeah, it's quite... There's been a few sort of big historical... Major historical figures there. Henry VIII lost. Sorry, British fans. And they didn't have a rematch. But apparently, that sort of wrestling, they both practiced Cornish wrestling and Breton wrestling, where there's two styles they both use, which was both basically you won if you got the other person to the ground. So the French king won with a trip.
Surely Cornish wrestling was some way of you packing an entire meal into the wrestling.
Well, they did. They wear jackets, so you wear a sort of a little gilet, and the idea is you try and grab the gilet to haul the other person down onto the ground. But apparently the Breton wrestling is similar, but they wear a slightly tighter gilet, so it was a bit more difficult for Henry to grab Francis's.
Wow.
Yeah, sneaky French fashion.
but then you French with your sneaky fashion.
But then, oh, by the way, Ben, as a Jew, do you know what Israel means?
Do you know
what the word Israel means?
I should know. It's
the name given to Jacob after he wrestles with the angel.
Yes.
And it means wrestles with God.
Really?
Apparently so. Wrestles or strives with God, yeah.
I mean, they need to change the meaning of Israel to wrestles with Palestinians. Wow, I did not know that.
Apparently that's it. And then one last thing I read was there's a lot of wrestling in ancient epics. So in Gilgamesh and in this one I read, the Sanskrit epic Mahabharata, two wrestlers, two great warriors called Bhima and Jarasandha fight each other. And it's sad, the way it's described is it's grasping each other in various ways by means of their arms and kicking each other with such violence as to affect the innermost nerves. They struck at each other's breasts with clenched fists, with bare arms as their only weapons, roaring like clouds. They grasped and struck each other like two mad elephants encountering each other with their trunks, which sounds feck all like WWE wrestling.
What I love is you've just read that, you've done your research and read that out, but earlier on I told you that a man shit himself.
Yeah, we've definitely found both ends of the spectrum.
Yeah, I think we've all seen what end of the spectrum I occupy there, guys.
That was beautifully academic. Although that's not unlike some of what Jim Ross sounds like on WWE.
It's true. Where is that? But then I obviously went down the same route as you and looked at gimmicks then, and a couple of ones you didn't mention. There was a guy called Val Venus.
Oh, I didn't find him.
Still wrestling.
Whose storyline was he was an ex-porn star, and it's Venus spelled with an I, not a U, to rhyme and look like the word Venus.
They did a whole storyline once where a Japanese stable called Kai and Tai threatened to cut off his penis. That was three whole episodes of Raw.
There was Hole in One Barry Dorsaw, who described himself
dead
as the best guy.
You're
now the live footnotes to all these wrestlers.
Yes.
He described himself as the best golfer in the world. But with attitude and the cocaine.
Formerly was Demolition Smash.
Do you know what his original golfing name was? He was originally called Stuart Payne, named after the golfer Payne Stewart.
But then Payne Stewart died in a plane crash,
yes,
and they weren't allowed to parody it anymore.
Yes, because he wore the flat cap and the +4 trousers that Payne Stewart wore. And his thing was, he instead of wrestling people, he challenged them to a putting competition in the ring, which is exactly what a crowd in Memphis, Tennessee want to see.
I thought we were going to watch you hit each other. No,
yeah,
no.
I'm going to talk on the microphone for 5 minutes and then have one putt.
That reminds me of one I forgot about. One of the Guerrero brothers, or Guerrero family,
yes,
turned to be...
Chavo did it. He was called Kerwin White.
Kerwin White,
which is a WWE backstage producer's name.
That's
why they gave it him.
Yeah. What's he doing?
Basically, he decided to make himself... I can't remember why, make himself as white as possible.
Ah.
And so he came in wearing slacks and a check shirt and a jumper around his neck.
Basically abandoned his... pretended he wasn't Mexican.
Yeah.
Because the whole joke was, haha, he's a Mexican pretending not to be Mexican. That's quite racist, guys.
Another one, Hector Guerrero, played the gobbledygooker.
Yes, he did. Survivor Series.
You mentioned an egg hatching in that Japanese thing. Thanksgiving in Hartford, Connecticut... What do the crowd want to see? There's a giant egg in a nest on its platform. They want to see a guy in a turkey costume come out. He's the new wrestling superstar you've been waiting for, who then gets in. You can genuinely hear the crowd booing. They are not. This is not what they came for.
And you've
got
to bear in mind, this is back when people didn't really boo. Like, you didn't boo because you were unsatisfied. You booed a bad guy.
Yeah, you booed the
heels. Didn't boo because this is terrible.
Yeah.
Which is what wrestling fans will do now because they're smarter to it. And it is, you watch that. I remember watching that because I was a kid when that happened.
You saw that.
I remember like, what's going to be in the egg?
Yeah.
It's going to be someone, it's going to be an amazing wrestler. Now, hang on. It is someone who Hector Guerrero was a
decent
wrestler.
He won about 2 dozen titles around America.
You know, part of a huge wrestling dynasty, but he's just taking a payday, dressed in a turkey costume.
Gobbling into the microphone.
Dancing. And he did a little dance where he
did the turkey in the straw.
Did a little scratching the foot thing, which, you know, like chickens do.
And apparently he's quite athletic, but in this like massive costume with feathers and what looked like papier-mâché claws on his feet, he tries to do a cartwheel at one point. It's the least accomplished looking cartwheel you've ever seen a wrestler before.
It's like Arsene Wenger announcing a new player coming out of an egg, and then Olivier Giroud just comes out dressed as Gunnosaurus.
That's exactly what it was.
But my choice for the world's worst wrestler, I basically found someone who had a lot of bad gimmicks. And I'm sure you'll know them, Jimmy. Mm. Ed Leslie, who was...
Oh, my God!
I'm really glad that that's your reaction. For listeners who don't know who Ed Leslie was, you will have heard of Hulk Hogan. He is the most famous name you could probably hear of.
Just so you know, listeners, Jim's head is still in his hands.
He ruined so many shows.
Ed Leslie... was, and I think possibly is still is, Hulk Hogan's real-life best friend.
And he's still wrestling as well.
And his thing was he would basically follow Hulk Hogan around from job to job, piggybacking on his success, trying to tie himself to him in some way. So, first of all, my favourite thing about his mate, is the character he's best known for is Brutus the Barber Beefcake, who I'll come to in a second. But if you see any photos of him, he looks like a mulleted Michael Ball in an Amdram production of Sweeney Todd.
Yes, he does.
With massive oversized scissors. So, he, first of all, when Hulk Hogan was wrestling as, Hulk's real name is Terry, is that right? Terry Hogan.
Yes,
and he cast himself as Hulk. Ed Leslie decided to call himself Eddie Hogan. Being Hulk's brother. And basically all his promos would be, oh, my brother Hulk's going to come along and he's going to beat you up, guys.
And that's why Hulk Hogan calls people brother.
Yeah, because he's
might not be, I don't know.
He does refer to him as his brother most of the time. Then when Hulk went to WWF, he joined them as Brutus Beefcake, who was basically oily. He didn't work with Hulk initially. He was a heel character. He was quite a pretty boy in a double act with someone else.
There's no more 80s name, by the way, than Brutus Beefcake.
I think he went with... The Brute, and then Beefcake, and then went, hang on a second, synergy. And then he had this sort of his hair was quite prominent part of his look, and his hair was cut off by another character called Adrian Adonis.
So
who
when
was brilliant.
Who when Brutus got his revenge, he
dead.
Yes.
I think we'll assume that they're all dead unless you say otherwise. Yeah. Might be the quicker.
No, no, I like doing this. It's my one role.
When he got his revenge on Adonis, he cut Adonis's hair off,
yep.
Earning himself the nickname the Barber. And you think, wait, Adrian Adonis cut his hair first. So why didn't he get the nickname the Barber?
Maybe it's like a mask versus hair thing where whoever beats him gets to keep the title.
Yeah, maybe. Well, then his trademark then became when he beat people, he would genuinely chop bits of their hair off. And some people in the crowd would like beg him to throw bits of hair to them as souvenirs, sweaty post-wrestling match hair. And that became his new trademark. He wrestled quite for most of the 80s in a double act again with Hogan, and then had an accident which damaged his face in 1990, a bit parasailing. And then he returned the next year and sort of running in at the end of fights and taking someone out and disappearing again as Mystery Man or Furface, basically wearing a fuzzy balaclava. They never explained who he was. His storyline never developed beyond that point. He just occasionally run in and fight people, and he was wearing this thing evidently to protect whatever damage he'd done to himself. He was let go a few years later, but then followed Hulk to WCW when Hulk went there.
And this is where
it gets really stupid. He called himself again Hulk's brother. They couldn't call him the Barber anymore because that was owned by WWF. So they called him the Clipmaster, which is what you call your barber, the Clipmaster, every day of the week, right? Yeah.
I believe, I think Clipmasters are playing in Shoreditch tonight.
He called himself the Butcher later on. He wore dark glass and hair. And basically, so they could do lots of butcher puns because he turned against Hogan at this point. So they were able to say, oh, he butchered a friendship.
Well, he joined a stable at this point called the Dungeon of Doom.
Yes.
Who had a wrestler called Jeep Swenson in it, who they called the Ultimate Solution. And then one day, genuinely, someone sat him down and went, yeah, listen, guys, I'm aware we're a company based in Atlanta and you might not be necessarily that comfortable with certain things, but do you know the last time the phrase the Ultimate Solution was used? And then they went, yeah, we're really sorry. And then yet still called the stable the New World Order. Not too long after that.
You mentioned Dungeon of Doom, because when he joined them, he appeared as the Zodiac, wearing black and white face paint. And you mentioned someone earlier who could only say, what was the word that someone could only say earlier on?
Chicken.
He could only say yes or no. So he'd be standing there and someone would say, you're going to fight the guy, aren't you? Yes. And he'd go, no, yes, no, yes, no, yes. That was it. That was the gimmick. He also appeared, a couple of other characters he had, the Booty Man, fascinated by his own arse.
Yeah.
And again, just basically hanging around the back of Hogan. Hogan called him Big Brother Booty at that point. And then he appeared as the Disciple, basically as Hogan's bodyguard. So wherever Hulk Hogan went, Ed and Leslie would find a way to invent a minor character to be somewhere in the background going, yeah, and I'm here too. Just for lots of terrible gimmicks and basically hitchhiking a ride.
The worst case of nepotism.
Yeah, exactly, completely. Just riding my best friend's famous and I'm going to get a bit of the action. He is my choice for the world's worst wrestler.
Also, I would say this, speaking as a pure wrestling fan point of view, never had a good match in his entire career.
Oh, really?
Legitimately, never had one good match in his entire career. And there's plenty of wrestlers who aren't particularly technically skilled. Hulk Hogan, never technically skilled, but you could understand he was a big star and he has still been in very, very good matches that had people like me on the edge of their seats. Ed Leslie has never been in a good match in his entire career.
Sadly not dead. So, as I am moderating this week, I get to choose between our three choices. Is it Ben's choice, Kamala, the Ugandan warrior? Is it Jim's choice, Raja Lion? Or is it mine, Ed Leslie, in various incarnations, notably Brutus the Barber Beefcake? I have to say, I because you're such an expert, I don't feel that either of us are qualified to give an expert, but also having seen the Raja Lion fight.
I'm so glad you've seen it.
I've seen it at the top of other people's lists of the world's worst wrestlers. It seems to be a fairly uncontroversial, universally accepted choice.
The minute I got the email about what I needed to prepare for this, is literally, I didn't even need to go, my brain went, Raja Lion.
Well, congratulations, Raja Lion. We will put up the video on YouTube when this goes out, so you can all wallow in the misery that his attempt at wrestling.
I did promise I'd teach you this before we finish. I can teach you how to come up with your wrestling name.
Oh, yes. Oh, yeah.
Okay, so in the 1980s, Brutus the Barber Beefcake, he had a job, right? Yeah. A lot of wrestlers had jobs. Big Boss Man was a prison guard. The Mountie was a Mountie. Mm-hmm. Tugboat was a sea captain. there's so many amazing, terrible gimmicks that people have. So what you do is, and I'll give you mine as an example. So ideally, you need a middle name. If you haven't got a middle name, use the name, because as a rule, your parents tend to tell you what you were nearly called. Yeah. So if you can't use your middle name, use the name you were nearly given. So my middle name is Daniel. Mm-hmm. So my first name is now Daniel.
Okay.
My surname, take any one of your grandparents' maiden names, right? Because you can't use your mum's maiden name or anything like that, because people will figure out your credit card details. So use a grandparent's maiden name. So I've used Garner. Right?
Right.
Daniel Garner doesn't sound that interesting, but then you've got to give yourself a gimmick. Then you take your dad's profession, right? Don't make it dark. If your dad's not around anymore, don't go with deceased. don't go with retired. Go with the best job that your, the best profession that your dad had. So I now become Daniel the Accountant Garner, which is easily a heel, right? So that's how you work it out.
Yeah.
What are yours?
Oh, guys? Mine is really poor.
Well, you say that. My dad has the same job as yours. So I'm Owen the Accountant O'Gorman.
That means we're a tag team.
Yeah. A pair of accountants.
Our finishing move is the tax return.
Yes. Well, you two will be facing up in a 2-on-1 match against Roger the Stationery Salesman Cohen.
Yeah. The system works!
With my finishing move, the hole punch.
I'm sorry, mate, you can't use that. Ed Leslie used it in 1988.
Before we wrap up, very, very quickly, I'm going to bring you some of the worst news of the week, which comes from the BBC website. Police in southern China are punishing drivers who dazzle other road users with full beam headlights by making them stare into the lights themselves for a minute. In the most Chinese punishment you could ever come up with. Shenzhen Traffic Police said, "Today we are carrying out punishments using a high beam." They tweeted this, or they sent this out on Weibo, the Chinese version of Twitter, which got 87,000 likes. They tried this tactic a couple of years ago, got a lot of criticism. This time around, apparently, quite positive feedback from the public at large. They fined someone 300 yuan, which is about £36, and they make them stare into the full beam lights of a car for a minute.
I love the Chinese police now.
It's great, isn't it? But this isn't the first time they've come up with an innovative punishment. Last year, they made jaywalkers wear green hats and green vests to direct traffic, because apparently the colour green is a pretty poor fashion choice to wear in China. They are embarrassing and blinding drivers, thus making it even safer for them to be on the road once they've learned their lesson.
Brilliant.
That is nuts.
Great, isn't it?
Properly nuts.
Thank you very much for listening to Worst Foot Forward. Thank you, Jim, for being a wonderful guest. Very informative. This will be a long edit. Where can people find you online and in real life?
In real life, somewhere probably near you at some point in the next year. My website's jimsmallman.com. There's a stand-up special on there you can download if you want to chuck $5 in my direction. I quite like it. I'm on Twitter at jimsmallman. My wrestling company is this_progress on Twitter, and their website is progresswrestling.com.
And fights all over the country.
Mainly London, sometimes in Manchester, sometimes in Birmingham, sometimes next year in Orlando and Oberhausen. just because, you know, like they mix it up.
Hopefully all of your roster will still be alive by then.
They'll all be fine. It's just the minute they get to 40, we just have to just sort of send them off.
To the glue factory.
Yeah, just you go out into the country now. Yo, what are we going out to the woods for, Jim? No reason. You just walk in that direction and go and get some mushrooms, and then I'll see you back at the car. And they never come back.
Thank you very much for listening. We'll see you again very soon. Thank you, Ben, as ever. Bye.
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 Oh, and Ed Leslie, get the fuck off our podcast. So that was Jim, who wins this podcast by two falls and a submission. As we said last week, this is one of the longest records we did. So if you enjoyed what we were chatting about, we've got about an extra hour of extra material that will pop out sometime.
I feel like we're gonna. This is the episode that is our Hobbit.
Yeah.
We could give you the extended director's cut is as long as the movie itself. Thank you so much to Jim for doing it. It was a really silly episode. And it's like a lot of these episodes, it's most fun when our guest knows a huge amount about the subject we're talking about, because it allows us to sit back and let them freewheel, as Jim very definitely did.
Oh, he did. Now, it's very exciting times. This is we've managed to let the planets align beautifully. If you enjoy Jim, and if you're someone who lives in London, or doesn't live in London, but owns a very fast and efficient car, Jim is playing at my comedy club tomorrow night at the Good Chip in Kilburn. We kick off at 8 o'clock, and Jim's going to come and headline. You've heard how brilliant he is. So if you enjoyed him, pop down and check him out.
Do. We've been meaning to do this for a couple of weeks, actually. We want to thank everyone who's been listening to the podcast so far, especially all those people who live in countries that we definitely don't have friends in. There's someone listening in Kenya, week on week. I assume it's the same person. There's someone in Egypt. There's various other places around the world. There's a good number of people, obviously, listening in the UK and Ireland, but we've got people in America and Australia and all over. If you're one of those people who's decided to add us to your regular podcast listens, then thank you so much. It really means an awful lot that to have strangers love us is all we performers crave.
Damn right. You're filling in the gap that our parents left.
I also love you, Mum and Dad.
Yeah. Mum and Dad never listened to this podcast.
No, they definitely did. I think they stopped after halfway through episode one.
Yeah, wise. As ever, this is especially going out to our Egyptian and Kenyan listeners. If you enjoyed us, please can you rate us and review us? I don't know how the iTunes algorithm works, but I reckon a 5-star from Kenya is worth like a 10-star from France.
Yeah, without a doubt. Also, do the usual stuff. Subscribe on Facebook and on Twitter at WorstFoot. Find us on Twitter as well at BazMaxDay and at Ben Vandeveld. And our guest next week is the lovely Thomas Hescott. Now, you mightn't have heard of Tom. He has been a theatre director and has now moved into the world of directing for television, most specifically directing on the hit soap opera EastEnders. And he's going to give us some of his insight into the world of TV. We're going to discuss the world's worst TV comedy.
And since he works on EastEnders, we're going to have to leave everything else about the episode on a cliffhanger.